Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the University of Iowa's John Papa John Entrepreneurial Center and their National Science Foundation I-Corps Training Program, helping faculty, staff, and students make an impact with their innovations and research. More at iowajpec.org.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and as Iowa freezes over, fresh, ripe berries from the garden may seem like a dream, but there are still things we can do to make sure our fruit-bearing plants make it through the winter. In a few minutes, Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University, will be here, and you'll also be able to join the conversation with your questions at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio, or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We're going to start the hour with strawberries and other fruit-bearing plants and Gail Nonicki, Professor of Horticulture at ISU. Hello, Gail.
Hello, Charity. How are you today?
Great. Thank you so much for being here. And it is time to think about putting our strawberries to bed. Tell me a little bit about what we need to be thinking about at the end of the growing season for strawberries, and then we'll talk about what to do next.
So first of all, strawberries are one of the favorite fruits in the spring in Iowa. And to be able to have those fruits in the spring, we do need to prepare those beds in the fall to actually survive through the low winter temperatures. So the low winter temperatures and then the freezing and thawing of that soil can be protected by putting on a mulch. And we would use something that would be clean and weed-free, such as oat, wheat, or soybean straw. Chopped corn stalks are another option that can be used. And in the fall, we would put about 3 to 5 inches of the mulch on top of the strawberry plants, and then this would settle over the winter to be about 2 to 4 inches in thickness.
Do you have to wait to put this mulch on? I mean, of course, things start getting cold. Your strawberry plants die back in September. But is this something that we should do right away, or is this something we need to think about when it really gets cold?
We need to actually plan for it when it starts to really get cold. The plants will acclimate in the fall, so too early is not a great option in September. But we do want to put it on before temperatures are always below 20 degrees Fahrenheit. We know that at plus 20, so not zero, but plus 20 Fahrenheit, we start to have some potential damage. Sometimes home gardeners get concerned because maybe the temperatures drop to 17 or 19, but if it's early in the year, the soil still isn't frozen. So that actually buffers that. So again, we want to put it on probably in northern Iowa about this time of the year in mid-November, and in central and southern Iowa, it would be from now to the end of November.
Okay, yeah, this morning I checked the temperature. It was 22 degrees when I took my dogs for a walk. So that sounds just about right, right?
Right. That's a good sign that we're starting to get to that point of about 20 degrees Fahrenheit.
And we do see people who grow strawberries in some creative ways. I've seen them on trellises, sort of hanging down. I've seen them in strawberry pots. And the strawberry pots are really popular. Is there a way to overwinter the strawberry plants that you plant in one of those?
So the strawberry pots, if they are kind of a tower that's permanently in a yard, you can put bales of straw around those and then make sure that you've kind of protected that whole soil area, because when it's not in the ground, that potential for it to freeze and thaw is much higher. So again, putting some bales of straw around those strawberry rounds or strawberry towers, you still probably would see more damage when something's up in the air compared to having it in the ground.
All right. They look so clever, but of course we do know that strawberry plants bear better if they're more mature, right?
That's true to some extent. So there's several types of strawberries. The one that we really enjoy in June are June-bearing strawberries. So they overwinter, and then we have the flowers and fruits in the spring. But there are some other types called day-neutral strawberries, and these flower and fruit throughout the growing season. And these types might be more adapted in things like hanging baskets or strawberry towers.
Okay, so we have some options. Now, once we get them covered for the winter and that mulch is going to settle through the winter months, what do we do in the spring?
In the spring, after probably I would say early April to mid-April, we would just simply take a rake and move back the straw off of the tops of the plants. We really love to have that mulch on the soil for the growing season because, one, it retains moisture for the plants, which is a great thing. We don't have to water as often. But secondly, the fruit will rest on that soil mulch, the straw, and that prevents a lot of soil-borne diseases getting on the fruit.
Nice, nice. And that also helps us a little bit with weeds.
Right. It always helps with weeds. That's why we always recommend weed-free straw. We don't want to be adding weeds to strawberry planting.
No, absolutely not. All right, let's talk about some of the other fruiting plants that we love. Let's talk about raspberries. What do we need to do with raspberries in the fall?
So for raspberries, there really isn't a lot to do in the fall. There are, just like strawberries, there are two types of raspberries. And then within those types, there are different colors. The two types of raspberries that are grown in Iowa are the summer bearing, and then those that are fall bearing or can be ever bearing. Within the summer bearing types, the second year's growth is what has the fruit. So in the fall, we just want to make sure that we have the planting cleaned up. We removed any dead canes that might have been in that planting, kind of clean it out, and just wait until spring. With regard to the ever-bearing or the fall-bearing types, if we want to maximize the fruit on the new season's growth, we do have the option to prune those off in the fall, or we can wait until spring to prune those. So again, the raspberries, it's not a lot to do at this time of the year except to clean up the planting. The raspberries do grow very well in Iowa. The types that are ever-bearing and both the summer-bearing, if they are of the red or yellow colors, they do well in central to northern Iowa. Across the whole state, though, they do well as they grow well. The black raspberries are not as winter hardy, so they would be best in central and southern Iowa.
When you say black raspberries, are you talking about the kind that kind of grow wild?
Right. These are the ones that we will often see on the edge of woods or along trails, and they do grow wild. The cultivated types that have improved fruit quality and yields are probably grown primarily in the Middle Atlantic states across through Ohio, but we can grow them here. One of the cultivars that is the hardiest is one that was actually developed by Iowa State maybe 70 years ago called Black Hawk, and that's one that's winter hardy. The other one that a lot of growers like to grow just in their home gardens is one called Jewel, which is also a black fruited raspberry, and that again would be most adapted to central and southern Iowa.
It just feels counterintuitive that they might not be as winter hardy given where we see them just growing in Iowa in some surprising places where they haven't been cultivated.
I know. I have a true confession. We have some volunteer black raspberries in one of our flower beds here at our house, and I cultivate those because I always know I'm going to get fruit every year on those. Again, the fruit are small. They're slightly seedy, but at least I have some fruit.
Well, and honestly, of course, it maybe growing up in the country and picking them wherever I found them influenced my tastes, but I actually prefer the flavor of the wild black raspberries. And I don't mind a few seeds in my teeth. Let's talk about fruit trees. Now, of course, we're just at the end of apple season in Iowa. Different kinds of fruit trees have different kinds of winter hardiness. But no matter what kind of fruit tree you have, you do need to be thinking about winter, not necessarily to protect it from the cold, but to protect it from critters, right?
That's right. A lot of the fruit trees that we typically grow in Iowa, such as tart cherries and apples and pears, they're very winter hardy, especially the selections that we would grow. The problem with these trees is that they're delicious to some wildlife. And so younger trees in particular are especially vulnerable. Probably the biggest concern in a home garden would be where rabbits or other things might eat the bark at the you know, where they can reach it from the base of a tree, such as a rabbit. So they're going to eat that, and they can actually cause girdling of that tree and significant damage.
All right. And when you think about putting something around the tree to protect it from rabbits or even deer, you really need to think ahead, right? So what kinds of things do you need to put on the tree, and how tall should it be?
So for rabbits and other critters that are kind of low to the ground that would feed on the bark, we would use what's called hardware cloth. It's basically a wire mesh that we would make a cylinder around the tree. And I think if it was 2 foot high, that would certainly be plenty high, because the key is to not have them girdle the tree. In extreme examples where maybe the snow cover is very high and they can stand on top of the snow, then there might be some damage that you didn't plan for. So that works pretty well for rabbits and things that are small animals. Deer create damage in different ways. At this time of the year, they'll be rubbing their antlers and other things, you know, throughout the season on the trees, so that can damage them. But they also find the buds really excellent to eat. So deer create a problem where they will eat the growth. On a large apple tree, they probably can't eat the whole tree. But on younger trees, they can damage the beginning framework and shape. So we really do need to exclude deer from eating our young fruit trees. And the way to do that is one, exclude the deer from your property, or number two would be to actually put some wire cages over a young fruit tree.
All right. And if it's a young fruit tree, you also want to make sure it's well watered before things really get cold. We are going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment with me, Gail Nanicki, professor of horticulture at Iowa State University. Cindy Haynes is going to join us in just a second, and you can join the conversation with your questions. Call 866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the University of Iowa's John Papa John Entrepreneurial Center and their National Science Foundation ICOR training program, helping faculty, staff, and students make an impact with their innovations and research. More at iowajpec.org.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and you are welcome to join the conversation with your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me today, Gail Nanicki, professor of horticulture at Iowa State University, and Cindy Haynes is also here, associate professor of horticulture at Iowa State University. Hello, Cindy.
Good morning.
Welcome to the show. And we've already got a lot of questions to get to. So let's go ahead and dive right in. And we've got a couple fruit questions. First, from Jefferson in Des Moines. Gail, are mulched cut leaves sufficient for a cover mulch for strawberry plants?
Probably they could contribute to the mulching, but maybe on top. The problem with using leaves is that they sometimes mat into layers, and so you can have a lot of ice that forms down in there. So cutting them up, I still would, if I was going to use them, I'd put them on top of my straw mulch if it meant I didn't have to buy as much straw mulch.
Okay. And here's a raspberry question, and you already answered this, but we'll just cover it again. From Caroline, can I cut down my heritage raspberry plants soon? If not, please give me a scientific reason why.
You can cut them down. The only reason that you wouldn't cut down heritage, which is the fall-bearing type, would be if for some reason it was a very dry area and you wanted snow to kind of stay in that area. It could, you know, be a way to capture some snow. But if the planting's well watered before you go into fall, you can certainly remove those now.
All right. So if you don't need it for a snow fence,
Right.
You can cut it down. This is a question from Lori. Cindy, when should we trim our tulip tree?
Actually, most pruning on most trees is the best time is in the dormant season. So I know it's not fun to get out there in February or March and do pruning, but that's usually the best time. You can see the structure a lot better. It's a little bit easier to identify what limbs need to be removed or limbed up. And sometimes pruning on woody plants in the fall encourages them to not acclimate quite as well. So if you can hold off on doing that until February or March, it's always a good time.
Well, and, you know, we've got a couple nice days every February, every March. It's nice to have something to do because you can't work on your garden yet.
Right. It's a great way to get outside. And it's usually sunny, so even if it's cold. And it shouldn't take too long to do some pruning. Because once a tree gets really large, it shouldn't need as much pruning. So if you can hold off until March, that would be great.
All right, let's go to the phones. Dan is on the line in Webster City, and Gail, he has a very unusual fruit question for you. Hi, Dan.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I started a pineapple plant from the top of a pineapple about 18 months ago, and it's in the house now, but is it ever going to fruit?
Well, it always has the potential to fruit. In the natural setting, after about 18 months, if you were in the tropics, you would have new pineapples about now. But I think you'll just have to wait. It may be several years. We have had very small little ones form in greenhouse situations. And I don't know, Cindy, if you've ever grown them yourself as a houseplant, but they should be grown as the same way that you would have a houseplant with a lot of light in the environment.
Right. So 18 months to 2 years is not unusual for this one to flower and fruit. Sometimes I've seen these flower and fruit when they got exposed to a little bit of ethylene or something else as well. So I hate to say that, but if once the heaters start coming on in a greenhouse or in your home, that's probably going to help induce some flowering, and then you'll start to see some fruit formation. So I would expect it sometime this winter.
Interesting.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Yeah, Dan, thanks a lot for your call. That was a much more optimistic outlook than I was expecting for a pineapple plant in Iowa.
I don't think it's going to produce a massive pineapple. They're usually pretty small.
All right, but still a whole lot of fun.
Yes.
Let's go to Rick in West Des Moines now. Hi, Rick.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
Quick question. This week I put spikes in the ground on all my evergreens, but now I'm looking at my nine bark, my althea, my burning bushes, my boxwoods, all my shrubs, wondering should I put spikes in the ground for those and water one good last time here before winter, or should I just hold off on the shrub fertilization spikes until next spring?
Yeah, I think the most important thing this year is just watering and watering well, especially in areas that were really dry this year. I would probably fertilize in spring if you need to fertilize, and some shrubs don't need to be fertilized every year. So the ninebark, the althea shrub, all of those are pretty tough, and if you have fairly decent soil, you may not have to fertilize every year. So I would water now and then wait until spring to fertilize and then water as well in the spring, hopefully we have nice spring rains. So you can be a little lazy on the spikes this fall.
Lazy's good.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Rick. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Carmen is on the line next in Wyoming. Hi, Carmen. Wyoming, Iowa, I should specify.
Yes. Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I have a couple of questions. One, I would like to have a variety for an ever-bearing strawberry and an ever-bearing red raspberry. And I'm assuming that you can mow those the ever-bearing red raspberries off in the fall. Am I correct on that?
So you're correct. Let's start with the raspberry first, okay? You can mow those off in the fall. And one of the things to think about is then which then of the varieties might do well. And the red fall raspberries, if you're really kind of in a normal climate within Iowa, not maybe in an extreme cold area, the two that people have really enjoyed are Autumn Bliss and Autumn Britain. The reason for that is because they have a higher yield, and also I would say the potential for larger fruit size than some of the original ones like Heritage.
Okay, within, and that was the Autumn Bliss, and what was the other one?
Autumn Britain, Britten.
Oh, okay. All right. Thank you.
Okay, and then for the strawberries, there's a whole series of different ones that are available. I think in home gardens, people will grow some of the traditional ones that are very winter hardy but have smaller fruit size. And then there are those that are kind of improved ones that you would grow as annuals. And one that isn't as high yielding but people have really enjoyed growing in a home garden is called Seascape.
Okay.
You know, commercial growers will grow them for different reasons. They want to have early ones or later ones. But I think Seascape in a home garden is a really nice one to grow.
Okay, so here's my second question about the strawberries.
Yes.
We live on a farm, and we have retired, and so we have these feed bunks. And I want to know if I can put strawberries in the feed bunk. I would assume that I would have to bank it really well around the base in the winter, or for the, you know, winter. But I want to know if that's even possible.
It absolutely is, and especially for day neutrals. So you basically would have it as, I guess, like a container garden. Is that correct?
Right, yeah.
Yeah, it would be great. Strawberries are great in container gardens.
Okay, great. Thank you so very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call, Carmen. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Jack is up next in Des Moines. Hi, Jack.
Good morning, and thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Appreciate all the things you do for us. I was able to salvage a whole 5-gallon bucket of Naked Lady bulbs this fall, and I wasn't able to get them all planted. And I was wondering what I can do to overwinter them and plant the rest of them in the spring.
Right. If there's any way that you can plant them now, because my ground hasn't frozen yet, and it might be warm enough and plant them this weekend, that's the best thing you can do. Otherwise, overwintering them, I'm going to tell you, you're probably going to have to pot them up, put them in a container so that they can have some root growth this fall, and put them in an unheated garage that stays around 40 degrees. And then if you want to try and transfer them out in the spring, you can plant them as early as possible in the spring, hopefully before they start to send up foliage in the spring. But if there's any way you can get them out this fall still, before the ground freezes, it's a lot less work than trying to overwinter them indoors or in an unheated garage. And it's
great.
A wonderful plant. You've got to do this because this is a great
plant. It is a wonderful plant. We're excited to see them if they'll come up. So thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Jack, and good luck with that. We've got Sarah up next in Des Moines. Hi, Sarah.
Hello.
Hi. What's your question?
We're starting a raised flower bed in a yard that's never had a garden. And have been getting conflicting advice on the best way to treat the ground underneath it. We've got a wall that's about 2 feet high, and we figure we need to dig up the sod first. But we had recommendations that vary widely between lining the thing or putting down a garden cloth underneath for weeds or some chicken wire to keep mold and other creatures from digging up underneath it, and we're confused.
Well, how large or how deep is this raised bed that you're going to create?
It's 2 feet deep. It's about 5 feet long and 3 feet wide.
Okay. So this is a pretty substantial one. It probably is best to remove the sod so that you have some bare ground below. You can put down some sort of cloth to help prevent weeds. Most weeds are probably not going to come up 2 feet, really easily. So unless you've got some thistles nearby, you're probably going to be okay with just some cloth in the bottom as kind of a weed barrier. I don't know that I would go through the extreme of putting any kind of chicken wire or anything to kind of prevent moles, because I think most of the time with raised beds, I have more problems with chipmunks and squirrels, and they're coming in from the top. So they're not necessarily coming in from the bottom. So more importantly is making sure you have some good compost or some good soil and kind of mixing up and having a really good soil in that raised bed so that it drains well but still kind of holds on to some of that moisture. So you've done a lot of really good research, but you can ignore some of it just by, removing the sod and then maybe putting down a weed barrier if you want. I've created a raised bed, and I didn't even do that, and everything's growing just fine.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call, Sarah. And next up, it's Steve in Dubuque. Hi, Steve.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. For the first time, I decided to, I had a real nice geranium, potted geranium, so I bought it inside for the winter. And I looked up a lot of stuff online, and I'm just kind of confused. Is the best way to do it? I trimmed everything back. There's just the stems. It's in a cooler room in the house, kind of northwest-facing window. So I just wondered if there's anything else I can do, or what would you suggest?
So this is a potted geranium, so it's still in a container?
Correct.
So if you keep this in a sunny window, maybe an east or a west-facing window, it should continue to grow and probably even bloom throughout the winter. So you can treat this one as a houseplant. So water as needed. I wouldn't fertilize a lot this winter, but they actually make really lovely houseplants for most of the winter. If it starts to look bad, or if you want to keep it dormant, you can put it in a cooler section of the house. Don't give it any light. You'll just let it go dormant. And believe it or not, geraniums have a thick enough stem that we can actually bare root them, take them out of the container, put them in a paper sack in the basement all of winter, and they will survive just fine. And you can pot them back up in March, and they will start to grow again once they're potted and put into a sunny window. So you have two choices. You can treat it like a houseplant and keep it going throughout the winter, or you can let it dry out and go dormant. And believe it or not, it will survive in that kind of dark, cool place in a basement for several months without any care.
Okay, well, I'm going to treat it like a house plant, and then in the spring, I'd like to plant it. Is there anything I need to do when I plant it, or just like anything else I would plant in the spring?
Yeah, just like anything else in the you would plant in the spring, once you're moving it out inside to outside, I would acclimate it a little bit. So, take it out for a short periods of time and then longer periods of time so that it gets adjusted to the more sunlight, wind, and cooler temperatures. So you're not going to plant it outside until May, sometime in May, and you're going to have given it a couple of weeks of acclimation. You might also want to fertilize it right before you get it outside or right after you plant it outside, and continue to deadhead it because it probably will start to bloom again or will bloom later in the winter. And I think that's it. I think it's a tough enough plant that will last a long time, and you can do this for a couple of years with it, just like this.
All right, Steve, thank you so much for your call. Here's a question from Joe. He says, I live in rural Linn County. I'm looking for guidance on end-of-season care for my asparagus bed. Should I mow the stalks down, rake out leaves and weeds? I've never done anything to the bed since I established it 10 years ago, but I wonder if I followed better practices, if I would get better yields. I do get some nice asparagus as it is. We've only got about a minute left, but what do you guys think?
I think just let it go. Don't do anything this fall. Let the snow kind of fall into it. It helps insulate it. And then do the cleanup really early in the spring before you start to see any stalks. Gail, your thoughts?
I agree.
All right. Sounds like an excellent plan. Joe, thank you so much for your question. We are going to take a short break, and then we'll be back for more Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. You can call with your questions at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me today, Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University, and Gail Nonicki, Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. This is Talk of Iowa.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the University of Iowa's John Papa John Entrepreneurial Center and their National Science Foundation I-Corps Training Program, helping faculty, staff, and students make an impact with their innovations and research. More at iowajpec.org.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. And with me, Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University, and Gail Nonicki, Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. You are welcome to join the conversation with your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Here's an email from Mark in Marion, Cindy. He says, I lost 4 fruit trees from the derecho. Or maybe since we were talking about fruit trees, why don't we go to Gail? He says, 3 were dug out. 1 broke off at 3 feet above the ground. It started growing new branches. Should I leave it and see what develops? The tree does seem a bit loose in the ground. Possibly a root broke off. Secondly, can I replant the other 3 in the same location? I did dig out the three stumps.
So first of all, it depends on what the structure of that tree looks like, if it's worth saving or not. Certainly anything that would be above a rootstock level, you know, you can try to develop a new trunk. It's easier to start with a new tree, though. And then as far as putting it in the exact same location, we don't usually recommend that because there are some different replant problems that can occur, but you can just go a few feet, 3 feet on either side of those original places that it was removed and put the trees there. But certainly replant, the derecho was really difficult for all fruit growers, and so we want to be hopeful for the future, so I recommend replanting. Again, just a little bit away from where the original plant was.
All right. Cindy, here's one for you from Rachel in Cedar Rapids. I recently bought a home and inherited some less than desirable landscaping, so I have a few questions. 1, will hydrangeas grow well on the north-facing side of my house? We'll just go one at a time with these questions.
Yeah, and they will. North-facing hydrangeas, you're going to be limited to those hydrangeas that are the paniculata types that bloom a little bit later, that have more the cone-shaped flowers. And the Annabelle types or the arborescence types, which are the snowball white ones, or there are some pink ones there. Those are really tough. They're really hardy and should not have any problems on the north side of the house. Stay away from the pink and the blue ones, especially on that particular location. But if you go with the arborescence types or the paniculata types, she'll be in good shape.
Okay. That was the funnest of all the questions. Number 2.
Oh, great.
When should I do pre-emergent treatment for crabgrass in order to sow new grass or clover seed?
Right. So any type of pre-emergence that we apply to the lawn for crabgrass, you want to time it at about we usually say timing when the forsythia are in bloom or just when the petals are starting to drop. So that's usually in early to mid-spring. That's usually sometime in April. I would say early to mid-April. So look for some forsythias, and when they're in bloom, you know that that's the time that you can apply that pre-emergent. So it's going to catch the crabgrass before they start to emerge. And timing's pretty critical on that one.
All right. And then finally, I want to plant a small area to native wildflowers, but it's currently covered by Creeping Charlie. What do you recommend?
There are some broadleaf fall herbicides that you can apply now. Usually you want to get two applications in, and I'm not sure you're going to get two applications in, but if there is one that you can apply now, some of those broadleaf weed killers that are targeting crabgrass, I think triclopyr is the one ingredient that some people are looking for right now. That may limit it for the Creeping Charlie, and you may have to do some pulling again in the spring. So this is a tough one to get rid of, very tough to get rid of, and probably will take more than 1 year, definitely takes more than one application of some herbicides, and may require some persistent pulling on her part as well.
All right, let's go back to the phones. 866-780-9100 is the number. Betty's got a question for you, Gail. Hi, Betty.
Hi. I have a question. I prepaid two cherry trees, one Bing cherry and one Lapin's cherry, because she said I need two to cross-pollinate. How far apart should they be? And is it true that I needed two Bing cherries?
Okay, so two cherry trees, but they're different varieties is what you're saying, right?
Yeah, one Lapin's and the other Bing.
Okay.
I was planting this for my son, my grandson's birthday.
Oh, lovely. Gail?
Sure. So I would probably plant them at least 8 to 10 feet apart. I don't know what rootstocks they were grafted on, but you want to give them sufficient space to be able to grow. So probably a safe bet is 10 feet apart.
7 to 10 feet. It's a dwarf. If it's a dwarf variety,
it's a dwarf,
and
I think
I pre-ordered it.
Sure.
What month should I?
Okay. Sure. A dwarf, it would be great to. You can just go with about 8 feet apart. That's really common with fruit trees when they're dwarfing. About 8 feet is pretty typical.
Okay, Betty, you had another question.
She said it would be available in April or May. When should I plant it? May or April?
Well, they will come to you dormant, so you can plant them in April. So I would plant them as soon as you're able to work the soil, where the soil isn't too wet and you might hurt the soil structure. So wait till there's been a little bit of drying out, or you can actually work that soil and it still crumbles. It doesn't stay together in a clump. And so having some crumbly soil, you'll be able to plant those. The earlier, the better. So if you have that type of soil in April, that will be fine. They're dormant, so the earlier you can get them in the ground, the better off you are.
Oh, and I hope we can work the soil in April. Betty, yeah. Betty, thank you so much for your call. That is a lovely gift for your grandson. Next up, Barb is on the line in Illinois. Hi, Barb.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
We have an old oak tree. It's probably 3.5 feet in diameter, and it was struck by lightning a couple weeks ago. Mm-hmm. About 8 feet off the ground is where it hit, and it's bowed out like an 8 feet section of bark. And we just wondered if we should leave it alone. Should we tear that part off? Should we call a tree service?
Right, right. So oak trees are definitely worth saving. So, and I'm going to kind of pull a Mark Vitosh here and say that you're going to let the tree kind of decide what's going to happen next. Okay. If you want to bring someone out, like an arborist, to take a look at it, this sounds like there is some damage there, and there probably will be some damage to the plant next spring. But you might want to wait and see what comes back. Because there might be some part of the plant that comes back, and it may recover. But without having someone actually take a look at it, I don't think anyone can really say for sure. So I'm sorry.
All right. No, we'll leave it alone and see what happens.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Barb. Donna's up next in Audubon County with a question for you, Gail. Hi, Donna.
Hi. So my question is, I'm replanting and strawberries, new strawberries next spring. The old ones I took out because I just didn't like how they were bearing. So I would like a good June bear cultivar that they come on within a couple of weeks. I don't want them to spread out over the summer.
Sure. So for replanting of the June-bearing strawberries, one of those that is really popular in home gardens that a lot of people really enjoy is one called Jewel. It has good yields, and it really has great flavor and sweetness. So it's Jewel as in, you know, a beautiful red ruby. And so that's one that's been pretty popular for home gardeners, and I would recommend that one.
Okay. And will it be done growing by the end of June?
The fruit will be very concentrated in mid-June in Iowa climate, so probably in Illinois it would be very similar. It's a mid-season cultivar variety. Some of the really early fruiting ones are wonderful to have, but then they also bloom early, and then we might lose those blooms to spring frost.
All right, Donna, thank you so much for your call. Here's an email question from Pat, Cindy. Almost all of my trees were lost in the derecho. I want to replant trees and landscaping with native plants in the spring. I have two questions. First, the ground on the northeast side and the front of our 1949 house is still almost entirely builder's clay. Ferns planted on the north side where they should do well have struggled. We want to plant two trees toward the front of the house with native habitat below. What can I do to make the ground more hospitable?
Well, some of the things that some homeowners do, you might think about core aeration of the soil that kind of just punches some holes in the clay, because sometimes clay soil is kind of compact. You can also add some compost, light layers of compost on top that will improve the soil over time. I would also say when you're thinking about replanting trees, I would go with trees that will probably tolerate it. So things like hackberry, even tulip tree, catalpa, all of these are pretty tough. Linden sometimes as well, that will tolerate that kind of heavier clay soils and kind of create that kind of shade and that habitat that you're thinking about. Other plants, there are many other, you know, wonderful native trees and shrubs that you can plant in the area as well. And going and visiting a garden center in the spring, many of these should be available at the garden centers. So just remind everyone when you're thinking about planting that it is kind of a heavier clay soil. You can till it up a little bit for shrubs, but I wouldn't do much amendment for any types of trees. I think most of the trees can tolerate it. They just might be a little slower in getting established, but they've got to eventually learn to live in that kind of soil anyway. And you want a good root system, so you want them to mine all of that soil. So I would instead select things that can take it.
All right. And the second question, the city will have lots of free compost. Are there any concerns with using this compost under the trees and around native plantings? No doubt the source of the compost will include walnut trees.
Yeah, and I wouldn't worry too much about it. If we were putting this out maybe in the spring and, you know, there were damage that happened over the summer or over the winter, then maybe. Most of the jug loam, which is in walnut, usually disappears within a couple of months. So even in the bark and the roots and the leaves and the walnuts themselves, it's not incredibly long-lasting. So even if it is walnut mulch and walnut compost, if it's gone through 3 months of composting, it's probably okay.
All right, back to the phones. Linda's on the line in Cedar Rapids. Gail, you can take this one. Hi, Linda.
Hi, I have a question about cleaning up at the tomato patch, and in particular the cages.
Okay.
I'd like to know how to clean them to prevent verticillium wilt and other nasties like that.
Well, so Cindy, I'll let you jump in too. But I think I think anything you can do to actually make sure all the plant material is off of the cages is the first thing. And then, Cindy, do you recommend disinfectants on those wires, or what would you recommend?
Usually, if you're keeping the cages outside and you're removing just kind of any of the plant debris, if it's outside, it gets cold enough, it's probably not going to be a source of new infection. And it would be more important, I think, to make sure in that tomato patch that you clear off any kind of debris there in the patch itself. And then for the next 2 years, at least, you're not planting any more tomatoes, potatoes, eggplants, or peppers in that particular location, because they're all in the same family and they can all kind of get some of the same diseases. So, and that's often harder. So I wouldn't worry so much about the cages if you've kind of gotten rid of all of the debris. I would be more concerned about what you're planting in that spot next year.
All right, Linda, thanks for your call. And we only have a couple minutes left, so let's try to get through several of these questions pretty quickly.
Okay.
From Raj, I just planted two white pine trees approximately 3 feet tall in my backyard. I was told they're native to Iowa and deer won't eat them. A couple of days back, I noticed that they had been eaten. So the top of the central or leading branch was broken on both trees. Is there a good chance for these trees to continue to grow next year? And do I need to do anything to help them grow normally? Cindy?
Right. Yeah, so if a deer have kind of pruned them for you, sometimes you'll see another bud kind of coming up. And next spring, I would wait and see if there was another bud that near the top that you can train as a new leader, and it will be okay. I would also cage them because it's obvious that some deer are finding them attractive. So I would prevent more injury by putting a cage around it.
All right, this one's from Hillary Gale. I rescued an elderberry plant from a local store for $5 and was able to get it in the ground a couple of weeks before the first frost. Is there anything I can do at this point to ensure it survives the winter?
I would make sure that the soil is watered well, and then you might put a little bit of soil mulch around it because it's a late planting. So just some kind of mulch around the top of the soil. But that'll be great. Yeah, it'll be fun to have.
All right. She also wants to know how long it takes for elderberry to typically produce fruit after planting.
Well, they'll produce them pretty fast. You'll see elderberries on little tiny plants. But really, you want to probably in the third year, you'll be in full production, third to fourth year.
All right. And Cindy from Susan, could you please help us with the care of our newly adopted coral berry bush that we purchased through the Trees Forever and Cedar Rapids event recently? The only instructions given were for planting, and we were supposed to water approximately 5 gallons a week. When do we stop for winter, and how can we best protect these?
Right. So coral berry is a wonderful shrub. It needs full sun and well-drained soils. So watering well, like sounds like they have done this late summer and fall is good. I would maybe water it one more time before the ground freezes. And then if needed, come back in February, that warm day in February or March, and water again if you can. Otherwise, if you can't, if it stays frozen, it'll probably be okay until spring.
All right. And final question, Cindy, when can I start trimming some oak trees? We've had some oak wilt in the neighborhood.
Right. I would probably still wait until we enter into December. It's probably cold enough now, but, you know, this is one where patience pays off. So wait until December or January or February before you start pruning oaks.
All right. Russ, thanks for that question. And Cindy Haynes, thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks for having me.
And Gail Nonicki, thank you.
Thank you.
Cindy Haynes and Gail Nonicki from the Horticulture Department at Iowa State University. We will be back again next Friday with Horticulture Day. And then Thanksgiving and after, we will be on an every other week rotation as things get very cold in Iowa. This is Talk of Iowa. I'm Charity Nebbie.